Poor people are God's most blessed people. People with broken hearts are the ones that God loves the most. People who don't stand up for their own rights are the ones that God will give everything to. Does that sound shocking? Jesus intended for it to sound shocking. In the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5, as we're studying there at this time, we hear Jesus make some statements that was intended, first of all, of course, to be true, but secondly, to be shocking to those people who were hearing it, because it was contrary to what they thought and believed about their religious faith and about what was pleasing to God. And as we look at these statements of Jesus that we generally call the Beatitudes, the blessings, we hear Him say some things that go directly contrary to what our culture and their culture and mankind in general considers to be true. And yet we're hearing from the one that God sent down from heaven to tell us what pleases God. And He keeps using this word blessing. Blessing doesn't mean happy, though in some of our English translations that I think unfortunately is used. Happy in a sense, yes, but truly blessing or blessed meant to enjoy the favor and grace and honor of God. That's what that word meant to those people. And so Jesus says, if you really want to enjoy the favor of God and receive His blessings and be honored by Him, and I think the thought there would be at the end of time when He says, well done, good and faithful servant. If you want to enjoy the favor and blessings and honor of God, you need to realize these things. He says, first of all, blessed are those who are poor in spirit, those who know that they have nothing of eternal worth or value in and of themselves. For they are the ones that God is going to give His kingdom. And when people realize that they have nothing in and of themselves that makes them valuable to God, valuable in the sense that He must give us something, then we're brokenhearted. We mourn. Blessed are the mourning for those who mourn, those who recognize that their relationship with God is broken and that they don't have the power to fix it by themselves, that they have sinned against God, that He holds them accountable for their sins, and they're brokenhearted. They mourn. For they will be comforted. God will provide what they cannot provide. God will provide forgiveness. God will provide right relationship. But it will come from Him. It won't come from us. And blessed are the meek, those who are humble, those who do not demand their rights and who think others are beneath them and instead are proud and arrogant about who they are and what they are and what they have. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. They are the ones that God will give His new kingdom to. We ought to notice in all of this that in each of these cases, it doesn't say that these people have something. It says they will be given something. If they're poor, they will receive the kingdom. If they're brokenhearted, they will be comforted. If they are meek, they will inherit the earth. That's the blessing of God. And each of these leads to the next. Those who are poor will mourn. And those who mourn will be meek. And those who meek will hunger and thirst to be right, and they will be filled. We're looking this morning at the fourth of the Beatitudes in Matthew chapter 5 and in verse 6. Jesus says, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Just like the previous Beatitudes, Jesus is using words that would cause people to listen up, because He's saying something that sounds so different than what they've always believed. He said, blessed are the poor. Nobody wanted to be poor. Blessed are those who mourn. No one wanted to grieve and be brokenhearted. Blessed are the humble, the meek. And yet everyone felt like they had to stand up for their own rights, because if they didn't, who would? He said, blessed are those who are hungry and thirsty for righteousness. Many people in Jesus' day, in His nation, in his country, in his part of the world, lived almost a day-to-day subsistence. If they just went one day without work, just one day, they would be without. They didn't have Social Security. They didn't have Medicare. They didn't have Medicaid. They didn't have social programs in place that took care of the needs of those who couldn't take care of themselves. That's why there were so many beggars in the stories in the Bible. They had to ask their fellow man to be generous and kind to them when they couldn't take care of their own. But Jesus says, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. Everyone already understood what it meant to be hungry and thirsty. We even understand that. If there's any of the things he said so far, we understand. For most of us, the dinner bell rings 2 or 3 times every day. And if we just miss one meal, we think we're famished. And certainly if we go just one day without drinking at least water, our lips are parched and our throat is dry. And soon it becomes the consuming interest of any one of us to eat and to drink. It's such a natural part of what God has made us in our human bodies to be. And Jesus says that same kind of driving desire to eat, to drink, is what should be the characteristic of anyone who is going to be a part of his kingdom. But it's not hunger for food, and it's not thirst for drink. It's a hunger and thirst for righteousness, to be right with God. Many people in our world are not driven by a hunger and thirst for righteousness. I think in truth, they are driven by a hunger and a thirst, but they've substituted other things for that true object of their hunger and thirst. They have a hunger and thirst for acceptance, for being like everybody else, to have what everybody else has, to be praised and honored and looked up to the same way everybody else is. And so we all tend to wear the same clothes, buy the same products, do the same things, have an interest in the same topics to talk about, watch the same things on television, go to the same movies. And in large degree, people have ended up substituting for righteousness things of this world and of this life, whether it be power or position or possessions or prosperity. They've replaced righteousness with things of this world. And that's what they think they should be hungering and thirsting for. But you know what happens when people seek those things? They don't satisfy. As odd as it may seem, I heard somewhere years ago that the best diet in the world has lettuce in it. You know why? Because when you eat lettuce, it takes your body more energy to consume it than it gets back out of it. Lettuce doesn't satisfy. Oh, yes, for a short time, the stomach says, I'm full. But the body quickly says, there's no energy in that. There's no profit in that. I gained nothing. I lost. And that's what's happening with things in this world. When people hunger primarily for possessions or better jobs or more money or better other relationships with people, they never find the satisfaction. They buy a new car, and that's good for a month or two, and then it doesn't satisfy anymore. They buy a new house. They get a better job. They enter into a new relationship, but it does not satisfy because they're trying to fill a God-created void with something that's not, and it doesn't fill. It doesn't quench the thirst. It's only when man finally seeks God and has that hunger and thirst for Him that they at last find fulfillment. Here in this passage, Jesus says, blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. The word filled meant to satisfy, to be supplied abundantly. Later, we will read in Matthew chapter 14 how Jesus multiplied loaves and fishes to feed a crowd of over 5,000. And it says they ate until they were filled. They were satisfied. They had all they needed to eat. Truly, it was a miracle how just five little fish or a few little fish and a few loaves can be multiplied so that so many thousand could eat all they wanted and then afterwards take up 12 baskets full of leftovers. But that's the idea here, that when we hunger and thirst for righteousness, that's when we will have fulfillment or satisfaction. This speaks of the inner man, our inner person. Certainly our outward body has its own hunger and thirst, which we satisfy regularly every day. But this is of the inner man. And that's the part of a person that often gets most neglected by most people. We constantly are trying to satisfy the outer when it's the inner who ultimately needs full quenching and satisfaction of that hunger. And this inner person we have in the Scriptures, we're often told different things about our inner person. For example, it talks about in Ephesians chapter 1, Paul talks about the eyes of our heart. He's talking about how our inner person sees. We need to see with the eyes of our heart. We'll hear Jesus talking about in Matthew chapter 13 that he that has ears to hear, let him hear. He's not talking about what they heard with their outer ears. He's talking about could they hear with their heart. Were they letting that inner person hear the things that Jesus was saying? The psalmist will say in Psalm 34 and verse 8, taste and see that the Lord is good. He's talking about something of the heart, isn't he? We taste what God provides us with our hearts. And we see what God provides us with our heart. And the psalmist will say in the passage that was read to us at the beginning in Psalms 42 and verse 1, as the deer pants for streams of water, so my soul pants for you, O God. The part of the world they lived in was much like ours in some ways. It was a place where water was not abundant, where often those who had flocks of sheep or goats or other animals had to carry them long distances to find water sufficient to satisfy their needs. And that was true not just of the domesticated animal, that was true of those who were in the wild as well, the deer, the antelope, and others. They had to often go long distances to find the water they needed to sustain their life. And the psalmist uses that to compare to the way it is with us as human beings. In our world, there's very little that satisfies, that really quenches the thirst. And so we may have to search and search diligently to find that which, like the deer is looking for, satisfies our thirst. And he'll say, my soul thirsts for God, for the living God. When can I go and meet with God? Hunger and thirst for righteousness. Isaiah, since we're in the Old Testament here for a moment, Isaiah uses somewhat similar words to Jesus, and perhaps Jesus took his inspiration for what he says here from even Isaiah's statements in Isaiah 55. And there we hear the prophet Isaiah saying this, come, all you who are thirsty, come to the waters, and ye who have no money, come, buy and eat. Come buy wine and milk without money and without cost. Why spend money on what is not bread and your labor on what does not satisfy? Listen to me and eat what is good, and your soul will delight in the richest of fare. Hungering and thirsting for righteousness. The prophet Jeremiah will say, we've been studying this in our Bible class in the hour before this one. Jeremiah will talk of the people of his day in Jeremiah chapter 2, how that they had abandoned the source of living water, Jeremiah 2 and in verse 13. They have forsaken me, the spring of living water, and have dug their own cisterns, broken cisterns that cannot hold water. They had abandoned their pursuit of being in a right relationship with God and were pursuing other things. Their list was the same as ours today. Possessions and prosperity, position, power, politics. That's what they were seeking. That's what people are seeking today. But Jeremiah says of them that they have abandoned the source of living water that can really satisfy their thirst. In John chapter 4, Jesus will talk to a woman he meets by the side of a well. She had come out to draw water at an odd time of day. The women of small villages in that time would go early in the morning and late in the evening to get water for their families because they didn't have running water in their towns. And so there was always a well near every village, and the women were the ones usually charged with the responsibility of bringing that water in. And so they'd go out in the morning, often in large groups, and in the evening as well. And they would use that for a time for, visiting and socializing and so forth, even as they drew their water. But this woman comes out in the middle of the day. No one's with her. She's an outcast in her own society. Even in a culture among the Samaritans who were not necessarily known for being highly ethical and moral people at times, she was even an outcast among them. She had been married 5 different times to 5 different men, and now she's just living with a fella. But she comes out to draw water, and here's Jesus sitting there beside the well. And as she's probably keeping one eye on him because he's a stranger and obviously not from around there, and at the same time trying to carry out her business, Jesus asked her to give him some water to drink. He's just asking her to be hospitable, but he's also starting a conversation. And she asked him, how is it that he, being a Jew, would ask her, a Samaritan, for water to drink? Most Jews wouldn't have anything at all to do with Samaritans. They wouldn't even touch a cup if a Samaritan had touched it. And yet Jesus is asking her for water. She's sort of surprised at that. And his response to her was not an explanation of why he was asking her for water, but it shows that he had really only said what he had to start the conversation. For he says, if you knew who I am and why I have asked you for water, you would ask me, and I would give you water, living water, so that you would never be... He's obviously not talking about physical H2O, is he? He's talking about something that she apparently had been seeking all of her life. Her broken relationships are probably an evidence of that. That she was constantly trying to find something that satisfied. And she hadn't found it. And she would never find it unless she came to him. That's what he's telling us. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they are the one who will be. Jesus will tell the story in Luke chapter 12. Of a man who was doing quite well as far as this world is concerned, doing quite well as far as the people around Jesus would have evaluated his situation. And yet he's talking to people who were very religious people. They had a temple, they had holidays, practices, sacrifices, all sorts of things they did in the name of their religion. And yet it was clear that even among them, many were really hungering and thirsting for something. For many of them, religion had become simply a thing you do, because that was the acceptable thing to do. And you thought, well, okay, you know, I've given God his due. I made my sacrifice. I gave my tithe. I kept the holy day. So God should be satisfied with me. Let me get on about life and find and try to scratch the itch I have, meet the need I have, the hunger I really feel inside. Not really realizing that God was the one who really intended to meet that need, because they had turned their religion into just a sort of a performance or a perfunctory thing they did. And Jesus tells a story about one among them. He says, there was a man, a rich man, whose ground produced a good crop, Luke 12:16. And he thought to himself, what shall I do? I have no place to store my crops. So his business has prospered far beyond even his dreams. He's brought in so much that he has no place to store it. And he says, this is what I'll do. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. And there I will store all my grain and all my goods. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of good things laid up for many years. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. What is this man thinking? I finally have what will satisfy. What I've worked for most of my life, I finally have accomplished. I'm rich. I have more than enough. I can retire and enjoy the good life. But what he didn't know is that there is no good life unless God is at the center. But God said to him, you fool, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared? So whether God audibly told him that or whether this is just what God said and it's what happened, God says, you're dying tonight. And there really are two questions. Only one is written down here. God asked him the first question, then who will get all this you had for yourself? But the second question is even more disturbing, and it doesn't even appear here. And that second question that's implied is this, what do you have left? Everything that was important to him, he's about to lose, because he's fixing to leave this life and leave all that behind. Back then, just like now, there are no U-Haul trailers behind those hearses. You can't take it with you. The only thing you can do is send it on ahead. But he sent nothing on. He had nothing left when his life was taken. What I'm doing this morning with this beatitude is illustrating, if anything, what Jesus is. Remember the story of the prodigal son? In this story Jesus tells in Luke chapter 15, there's a very rich father. They both lived under his household, under his rule. They enjoyed the benefits and blessings of being there. But one son wanted something. He actually came to his father and said, Father, I'm tired of living here. I want to go out and experience the world. I want other things. So go ahead and give me my portion of the inheritance. He can't wait until his father dies even to get his portion. He asks his father to give it to him while he's still alive. Sadly, his father does that. Takes his own estate, and one-third of it goes to the younger son. How their system works. And the son leaves, and he's got money in his pocket. He can experience all the world has to offer. He's got a hunger that he wants to satisfy. So he goes out and he eats and drinks and enjoys and gathers friends around him who are friends as long as he's got money. But eventually, two things happen. Number one, he runs out of money. And number two, about that time, an economic depression hits the part of the world he was living in. And things are hard, and he has nothing, and he can't get anything. And finally, he's able only to get a job feeding pigs. Pigs then, different than pigs today in our country, they got just the leftovers. They got the grain that was spoiled. They got the husk from the grain. They got what even the sheep and the goats wouldn't eat. That's what they fed the pig. And he's feeding pigs and wishing he could eat what they were eating. Had he been satisfied? Has his hunger and thirst been met by seeking all that money that his father gave him could buy? No. Then it occurs to him that if he should just go home, and if perhaps his father would accept him back, he would be far better off than he is. And he suddenly realizes how blessed he was when he was living under his father's roof. And he goes home. And his father welcomes him back, meets him on the road before he even gets to the house, and again honors him as his son and declares that his son who was lost has been found and his son who had been dead is alive again. He throws a great party for the coming home of his son. But then there's the other brother, the other son, who lived under his father's roof all this time, and yet his hunger and his thirst had never been met either, because he never realized what he... And he's jealous of his brother. It's almost like he regrets he hadn't done what his brother had done. And now he's especially jealous that his father's showering such blessings on his brother and welcoming him home when he's been here all the time. Jesus wants us to know that it's in God our Father we find our satisfaction and nowhere else. We know what it's like to be hungry in this world and to be thirsty, though I'm trusting none of us have ever learned what it means to be dying of thirst or dying of starvation. But he tells us that's how we ought to be craving a right relationship. We need to hunger and thirst for righteousness. We need to hunger and thirst to know what is right, to do what is right, and have a heart that is right with God to enjoy the righteousness that comes from. And then we will be satisfied. Paul will say, as far as this world is concerned, he had learned what it was like to be full or to be hungry, to be free or to be enslaved, to have or to have not. And he could endure all that because he enjoyed the fullness of a relationship with him. The basic needs he had spiritually. And he didn't need those other things in order to meet, to be satisfied with God. That's the lesson Jesus wanted the people of his day to understand. And that's the lesson we have from Him. What are you hungry for? If you go a day without spiritual nourishment, do you feel hungry? Or if they do, they don't recognize that's what it is. We should hunger every day for God in our life. Not just for His blessings, not for His providence, but to have the knowledge and the sense that we are in a living, ongoing relationship. And when we can go a week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks without worshiping Him, we should feel famished. In our Bible question that's in the bulletin this morning, I asked the question, what was the first thing the Jewish people built when they returned from Babylonian captivity? As a nation of people, they had spent 50 to 70 years in captivity in Babylon. And even though they knew that God was still with them, and they could pray to Him, and they could sing to Him, and so forth, they were famished for that right relationship with Him. And it tells us in the book of Ezra in chapter 3, when they finally, the first of them finally returned to their homeland and took an assessment and evaluation of where they were and what was going on, the first thing they built was an altar. An altar. And then they got the men who had been long ago appointed by God to offer sacrifices on altars. And they had them offer sacrifices to God for their sins so they could feel that forgiveness from God again. And then they offered sacrifices of worship called burnt offering, which said, in effect, by making those offerings, God, You are our God, and we will ever praise You. They had a hunger that only that could satisfy. So the first thing they built when they got back to their land, and then a temple, and then their houses, and then eventually, 40 or 50 years later, finally a wall around their city. They were hungry and thirsty for righteousness.